Hey there, everybody. It is August 29th, 2013, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, and we sure hope you do. Send that email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. If you have any guest ideas, any feedback, or you just want to say hi, every single email gets answered over at ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. Right there on the homepage, you can submit a relationship question for our expert, Dr. Frankie. She's going to be on in a couple weeks to answer your question, so just click the link right there on the homepage. You can follow us on Twitter. We're starting to use it a little bit more. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And what we, of course, use every other second is our Facebook page. Stroll on over to Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a fun show for you this week. A new guest, an old guest later on in the show, but let's start with the new. Our first guest, Camilla Sabella, is a chef, a pastry chef, an event planner. A graduate of the New York Restaurant School, Camillo has worked in such renowned restaurants as the Plaza Hotel and the Fashion Cafe. He has served as the executive chef of Vegan Divas Bakery in New York, and his food has been featured everywhere from the Food Network to Time Out Magazine to the Trendy Vegan. I am now officially starving, and he is to blame. Camillo, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you, Ken. How are you today?
I'm hungry now. You are our first male chef that we've ever had on This Show Is So Gay.
I'm so excited. Forget about it. I'm totally excited.
So we got to do a little history on you. I'm reading online that your chef ambition started right around when you were 12 years old in the kitchen.
Well, my mom was such an extraordinary cook. She also was a seamstress, but she was extraordinary. Like, I grew up in a Catholic Italian, you know, your mom stayed home. She took care of the kids, and my father was a butcher, but my mom would cook like she would be cooking for like 20 people, and it was just the four of us. and her answer was, well, you never know who's going to stop by. And, you know, you when somebody stops by, whether it be my friends, my brother's friends, or her neighbors, or, you know, people from the church group, she would just, like, feed everybody.
Nice.
And she could take whatever was in the fridge, whether it be leftovers or vegetables. And we had a small garden in the backyard. And she would take anything and just turn it into something that was, like, unbelievable. Like, she was like my inspiration.
What was her signature dish?
Well, her signature dish, well, my favorite dish from when I used to watch my mother make was anything that on a Sunday morning when she would get up and make meatballs and sauce and everything, she would have us roll, you know, kind of roll the meatballs into little balls. But the leftover batter, she would take whatever was in the refrigerator, like artichokes, any kind of like arugula or roasted peppers or salad, and turn it into like a frittata.
Wow.
That we would eat for breakfast. And it was just like the most fun because different things, whether it be the ends of salami, the ends of prosciutto, the hard ends of cheese, she would just turn it into something that was like a masterpiece.
Wow, there you go. And you were in the kitchen helping out?
Yeah, I was mostly in the kitchen. I kind of like found a love for it because I always like kind of got inspiration from looking at something from the beginning, and I would see my mom finish it and it'd be a totally different looking product at the end. So that really inspired me to really get into the kitchen. Also, that a friend of mine from school, his mother's boyfriend owns restaurants in Brooklyn and bars and grills. So I started helping out there when I was like 15, and, you know, I would be in the kitchen like making tiramisu and all that. So it was like a mixture of both.
Let's get right down to it, because first of all, I have to say that almost everything I know about chefs, I've learned from watching Top Chef, so I don't know how skewed my opinion is.
No, chefs are really passionate, and really, some chefs are really hard to work with. I've worked with many chefs that if you didn't move quick, they would kind of burn you.
Wow.
or they would yell and scream and curse. But you would get used to it after. I think it's like sometimes it would be like an endearing thing, like if a chef yelled at kids, then at the end of the night they come to you and like, you did a great job, and you know, like the staff would go for a beer or we'll go out to get a drink or something or get a bite to eat. But it's the Top Chef thing to me, I respect people. I respect chefs like that because it's really difficult to cook on a time limit and to cook with, you know, with that type of like drama, and they always try to trip you up and everything. But to be honest with you, I find like food is love, and I really don't want to get into some type of like competition to prove, because everybody's taste buds are different.
Right.
So who could say one thing is better than another?
Right. Right. So the kitchen is kind of an interesting place, and I've been doing some research and reading different articles in advance of you being on, and it sounds like it can be just this hyper-masculine environment.
It could be intimidating at times. But I guess if you go into it feeling confident and, you know, you've had years of experience, people kind of like try to test you out, chefs try to test you out, line cooks try to test you out, and whoever may be in the kitchen try to test you to see how far they can push, or, you know, what things could be said. But if you prove yourself in your food and, you know, in your work skills and your professionalism, it all like comes down to everybody respecting each other and how they cook and how they put out food and their skills.
Is it a problem being gay in the kitchen?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a problem being gay in the kitchen, but I have had situations in one particular job that I had been at for about 10 years and was a very big part of that. I shouldn't say, I'm not going to mention the store, I worked at an organic vegan market and kind of like brought the bakery up from doing like 200-300 a day to doing like 20,000 a week, and also doing wedding cakes and doing, you know, as you know, I only cook vegan desserts and do mostly only vegan baking and vegan cooking.
Oh, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, but I'll get into that. Into that after. The thing about that kitchen was they had changed management in the store. One owner had gotten bought out, and there was a certain situation that came up. And usually, like in a kitchen, you know, temperatures flare. One person's aggravated with another. Situations happen. I won't get into the situation, but it was a female that worked the counter at my department, you know, selling all the pastries, all the baked goods, all the muffins, everything, all the cakes. There was somebody at the juice bar that was sexually harassing her every day. So I fully witnessed something one day, and I spoke up. And, you know, there was a lot of customers in the store, but I didn't do it in a non-professional way. I just pulled the person aside. I said, you know, there's plenty of room here. You don't need to pass so-and-so that way and, like, you know, rub up against her. You've been doing that for a while, she says. And, you know, I think you really need to get a handle on, you know, what you're doing. Disrespectful. And in the middle of things heated up. And, you know, when somebody tries to get back at you, whether they say you're fat, this, that, they try to insult you in a personal level, not in a to hurt your feelings. Mm-hmm. And like in front of like a few important customers, he had said a lot of things in Spanish and said a lot of things in English that were really, really demeaning towards me. So I had went to the manager on duty and I said this and that. And personally, it's not that I dislike this person, but personally I said to myself, I said, I could either catch him outside and deal with it in a Brooklyn way.
Oh, yeah.
Or I could go and be professional and see what the managers say. Well, the managers, you know, they're very close friends of mine, working somewhere 10 years, and they didn't really believe that it was to that extent what I said. Mm-hmm. And they went to him and he totally denied it until a few customers came to the front and said, you know, we heard what happened and we were there, and Camilo, you know, is telling the truth because we buy his baked goods almost every week or every day, whatever they had said. And I had spoke to the owner afterwards, and we had went up to the office and had a meeting, all of us had a meeting, and he totally denied it again.
Wow.
So I decided to walk off the job and say, you know, if you're not going to deal with this in a professional level. Then I said, well, Canelo, you know, he didn't really say anything that was untrue, or he didn't say anything, you know, it's just something that was said in the heat of the moment. I said, well, you know, you shouldn't say things like, especially in front of customers.
Exactly.
And especially working in Greenwich Village, where it's a high population of customers that come in and support our bakery. So I walked off the job for about a week and a half until they had called me back and they said, should we fire such and such? And we were all together in the office and I said, no, keep him on. And, you know, as long as he admitted that he did that and was honest and apologized to me, I forgive him.
Nice. Nice. And you were telling me, we were talking off the air, and I love the flip side of this, that you've been in that really cool position of being a mentor to young gay chefs.
Yeah, it's just like, not only young gay chefs, like wait staff and kitchen crew. Yeah. And like, I totally live by the fact that you treat everybody in the kitchen the same and respect them the same, whether they're dishwashers, porters, prep cooks, kitchen cooks, chefs, sous chefs, waiters, waitresses, like, I personally would take care of my dishwasher and feed him or her first before I would feed my staff, because they are the ones and the backbones of, you know, getting the kitchen ready mm-hmm. for service and really, you know, being there, you know, in the kitchen with you if something breaks or food gets messed up. And, you know, I really live by that fact and, you know, treating everybody the same. And, you know, so I think that whether a waiter comes in with a problem and kind of like laughs and had a problem with his partner or his boyfriend or a waitress or a kitchen member or somebody that works as a barista in the coffee shops, you know, that I work in, you know, I kind of like always try to like give them some kind of like heart, mm-hmm. you know, and 'cause I've been there and I know how hard it is to really be out there and try to find, you know, a great relationship and totally. Try to, like, live your true life, and it's not easy.
We have to talk about the vegan thing, sir. I will tell you that years ago, on this very show, one of our guests challenged me to be vegan for a week. It was Nathan Runkel, who, as folks know, is the executive director of Mercy for Animals, and he challenged me to be a vegan for a week, and because it was on the air and we used to do a live show, I said, yes, of course I'll do that for a week. I lost so many friends that week because I was so mean to everyone because I was so hungry. I feel like I don't know how to do it.
Well, to be totally honest with you, I was mostly vegetarian for a long while. I was vegan many, many years ago for about 8 months, and I lost about like 30 pounds. Felt incredible, felt so light, felt so energetic, was the best thing. I had gotten jobs otherwise to, like, you know, I have to sometimes taste food, and sometimes you can't work at a vegan restaurant or a vegan bake shop. You have to make a living, so you do have to work at places where you need to taste things. And, you know, and I would put it in a napkin and kind of, like, spit it out professionally. But I was vegetarian for a while and then became vegan again and tried to, like, eat healthier. And I feel like if you do it the right way, you can lose, like, I had lost, I think, like 12 pounds in the first week.
Wow.
You know, I think you really need to speak to your doctor, your physician, and really see if you can tolerate whether some people, you know, it would be hard for them to become vegan because either they're celiac and it's hard for them to eat wheat. So vegans mostly eat bread and you know, vegetables and stuff like that. But you can really train yourself and really educate yourself on making lots of plant-based foods without having gluten, without having bread, and with putting lots of protein in your diet, whether it be beans, legumes, and vegetables and greens, and eating gluten-free bread, even though it's some of it's processed, you really have to look at the labels and stuff.
My assumption is that you could throw just a mean gay dinner party.
Well, I've done many brunches, whether they be, you know, gay or not. Like, I come from, you know, I was brought up in Brooklyn, so I still have, like, that relationship with my Brooklyn friends, and
yeah.
They're mostly married with kids, and we get together every once in a while, and they kind of, like, laugh, because sometimes I'll, you know, throw a brunch or a lunch or a dinner party, and, you know, have, like, a vegan theme, but I won't tell them.
Right.
my desserts are easy to you know, fool them, you know, because my desserts really don't taste vegan. They just taste, you know, fresh and natural. But like other things, whether it be salads or, you know, I try to take comfort food and food that I was brought up on and try to have a twist to it and make it vegan, like whether it be chicken pot pie or, you know, making it with seitan, whether it be mac and cheese and making it with daiya cheese and butternut squash and adding a few other things to it to make it taste really, really delicious, or making like a chicken parmesan made out of like tofu and roasted garlic and, you know, just putting a nice marinara sauce and a good vegan cheese on it and, you know, serving it with really fresh pasta and veg. So they really can't tell. I mean, they could tell because of all the other things that Italians put in their sauces and stuff, but it's easy to fool them.
Now, what kind of dinner guest are you? Are you one of those guys who is thinking on the inside, oh, I could have done this better?
No, I'm so not high maintenance. I'm very easygoing. There's plenty of times when I work all day and I come home and I'll just want fries.
Nice.
So, you know, I'll go to the diner and I'll like ask them, or I'll make fries myself, or I'll go to like Whole Foods or Fairway and, you know, buy the organic fries and, you know, make them my own way, because some places they fry them in the same oil that they fry animal products in it. So I try to like stay away from that.
I would be so nervous. I always wanted to go to a culinary institute. I wanted to do that, but I would be so nervous that if a chef yelled at me, I would start crying in the kitchen.
No, it's so, it brings me back to one of my mentors that after I finished culinary school, I worked for a woman that was an unbelievable mentor. Her name was Marianne Tarullo, and she had owned Cafe de la Gare in New York City, a really authentic French bistro. And I worked with her for about, I'd say, 6 months. It was part of the curriculum to get your certificate.
Okay.
And I learned so much from her. She would scream, yell,
oh my gosh,
tear me apart, curse at me. She was this woman. She was very, very beautiful. You know, she, you know, was this Italian, you know, husky, very like intimidating, very strong. You know, I guess in, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, the kitchen was even like more intimidating, especially for a woman.
Oh yeah.
I guess she had to act that way to make it, you know, and sometimes that's what you gotta do. You gotta fake it until you make it. And she just tore me up every single day. And I remember the last day that I was there to fill out my hours for my externship at the school I went to. They, instead of calling it an internship, they called it an externship.
Mm-hmm.
It was out of school. And she took me aside and she was like, you know, I want to offer you a job. And I was like, oh, you know, and like, she's like, you're really good. You just got to like not take things so personally. So I remember her saying that. She gave me a hug and she was like, you know, you have great skills. And she just, from this day on, I'm still friends with her. And I love her. I mean, I think she was one of my biggest mentors, and that would be Chef Marianne Tarullo.
Look at that.
Awesome.
And now that's what someone's saying about you. Have you been in the position where you've been yelling and tearing people apart in the kitchen?
I would never tear anybody apart. I feel like because I maintain different jobs sometimes. I do work at the coffee house that I, you know, that I do all the pastries for and all the baked goods, the vegan baked goods and all the soups and different salads and stuff. But I also have a job at a kosher temple, at a temple in the city that, mm-hmm. you know, I have to run kitchens sometimes for 800, 900 guests, whether it be
wow.
for, very high profile, events, holidays and all that. So I always try to speak to everyone with respect, and whether they're doing something wrong, I always try to, correct them in the way that it's, that they didn't like mess up, but this is a better way of doing it. And I feel like, you know, I've learned in time to do that. And, you know, they say you get more with honey than with vinegar. So
I want to do my externship with you then. Is that possible?
You'll get, Then you get more with maple syrup than with vinegar.
There you go. Hey, I spent the last 6 years in Vermont. I can deal with that maple syrup. You can go online. Folks can go online. They could watch you making a mousse, which I will make the mousse.
It is excellent.
Yeah.
You have to really, you know, and I have a lot of, I have recipes posted, and you could see a few things on my Chef Camillo Sabella Facebook page. And if you're in the New York area, come to Jack's Stir Brew Coffee on 10 Downing Street.
Nice.
And say hello.
I want the chicken pot pie.
Well, it's actually seitan.
That's what I want. I love.
And a lot of my friends call it Satan pot pie. I'm like, no. I start from scratch making. I do the crust. I make the crust with coconut, raw coconut oil. I kind of like saute the seitan and make it really crispy, so it has that texture of chicken, and you know, really cut the vegetables, really, you know, and have a lot of herbs and spices in it, and really cook the sauce down. You know, since you don't have that meat, the drippings from the chicken, you have to make your own flavor. So I kind of add like roasted garlic, rosemary, thyme, oregano, and really do like cook down a good vegetable stock, and then, you know, put it in a nice pie dish or ramekins, you know, for individual servings, and just bake it up.
Nice. I'm telling you, I've been a vegetarian for 12, 13 years now, but seitan is not actually the most easy to find at various different stores.
Well, I'm sure you can order seitan. There's boutique companies that, you know, have mail order that you can order, you know, really great tasting seitan. I don't really have the names of it on hand.
I'll look it up.
Go to any good health food store or Whole Foods or Fairway or any kind of like great market in your town or city. You could definitely find packaged seitan that is really, really good. And
nice.
Then you need to like, you know, spice it up and flavor it, and you know, and then it really works well in a lot of meat dishes.
Except for the rosemary, I have to tell you that I don't want to name any names, but my ex-husband, he ruined rosemary for me.
Well, rosemary could be very medicinal if you use too much.
It was like eating a forest, and flashbacks.
I remember when I was starting off as a chef, and I did a couple of dinner parties. My favorite dish to cook like 20 years ago was like roasted rosemary chicken with roasted garlic inside and lemons inside the cavity of the chicken. And like, you don't put a lot of rosemary in. Whether you're doing, you know, anything with meat or anything with bread, you know, rosemary could be very, very medicinal. You really have to watch and make sure the rosemary is fresh, and make sure that you also have other type of seasonings with the rosemary, because rosemary is a very strong spice, and many people they really don't like the flavor of it. Rosemary and cilantro.
Oh, see, cilantro, I like.
Cilantro tastes like soap.
Can I tell you the other thing that I don't like that I get in a lot of trouble for?
What is that?
I don't like ginger.
Oh, I love ginger.
Everybody says it. I know. I feel bad. I'm hard to date. What do you want from me, people? It's fine. It's fine. Now, what does the future hold for you? What do you see yourself opening up your own place? Do you want to keep doing the gigs that you're currently doing? What are we looking at?
I would love to have a cooking show.
Nice.
I would love to teach people how to cook in a healthier way, and it won't, like, it doesn't have to be difficult. I would love to have people not be afraid of their kitchen. You know, I work 12-hour, 13-hour days, and I'll come home and I'll make something. Like, you know, there's no need to be afraid of the kitchen. Also, I would love to do a cookbook and love to do, like some type of show, whether it be on the Food Network or whether it be on a healthy living station. It's hard. When I was younger, I was very overweight. My father was a butcher, and my mother, you know, was such a great cook that if we didn't eat a lot, it was like an insult to her.
Mm-hmm.
You put one chicken on the plate, you finish that, there's another one that goes on. And like, Mom, I'm not hungry, I'm done. no, you need to eat that one. What am I going to do with it? And my father, like being a butcher, we'd get so much fresh meat in. But later on in my childhood, my father had really, really bad diabetes and had both his legs amputated. That's what really inspired me early in my culinary career to try to eat healthier and cook in a healthier way and try to inspire myself to eat better and not use, but you don't need to eat that huge plate of pasta, or you don't need to eat 3 or 4 portions until you can't get up from the table. You could just have everything that you want, just in moderation. Food is love, but people need to understand that, like, healthy food is a better version to that.
Yeah. Well, heck, everyone here at This Show Is a Gay certainly supports you getting your own show, and we would love to promote it when it gets going. We're ready.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I mean, it's dreams. They say, oh, you got a dream, no?
Oh, yeah. You got a dream. Folks, you need to stroll on over. You can go to Facebook, because Chef Camillo has his own Facebook page, and you just type in Chef Camillo Sabella, and we will link to it on our site. Anything else you want them to check out?
Just check out my page. I'll be posting recipes, and if they have any questions to anything that they want to, ask me about, I would love a shout out and a hello, and I totally appreciate them coming to my page and checking it out.
Can we get some sort of dish named after us? The So Gay Pot Pie something?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Next time I have a dinner party, I'll make a dish and have it named after you guys.
I will be there. I will come right back home to New York City and see it. Chef Camillo, what an absolute treat having you on the show. Please do keep us posted on all the amazing things you're doing.
Thank you so much, Ken. It's my pleasure. Thanks a lot. Thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Your dinner. Be our guest. Be our guest. Put our service to the test. Tie your napkin round your neck, Sherry, and we provide the rest. Soup du jour, hot hors d'oeuvre. Why, we only live to serve. Try the gray stuff. It's delicious. Don't believe me? Ask the dishes. They can sing, they can dance. After all, miss, this is France. And a dinner here is never second best.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, our second guest is making a triumphant return to our show. Kiyomi McCloskey plays guitar and sings lead vocals for Hunter Valentine. She is a self-taught Canadian multi-instrumentalist and songwriter who has composed songs for over 13 years and produced a catalog of over 200 songs. She wrote her first song at the age of 14, which we're going to ask her about, so she should start preparing to answer that, and began performing professionally at the age of 16. She has toured extensively all over the world, supporting such acts as Sam Roberts, Cyndi Lauper, Ace of Base, Kiyomi. As part of Hunter Valentine, they've been touring everywhere, celebrating their 2012 release, Collide and Conquer, and coming on the heels of Kiyomi's star turn on the hit reality TV show, The Real L Word. And now she's back here with us. Kiyomi, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Do you know it's been 2 years since you've been on our show?
Is it really that long already?
No, seriously. Yesterday it was 2 years ago.
Wow, it seems like it was not that long ago. You're making me feel old.
Well, I don't know if you're aware, but you've had quite the eventful 2 years.
I have. I like to keep busy and keep growing and expanding, trying new things. So. That's what we've been up to.
Very exciting. Well, let's start with what I tipped off. What was the song about that you wrote at the age of 14?
The very first song, it must have been, it was a song called Fly Away.
Okay.
And it was like each verse was like about a different struggle story. So I remember one verse would be about racism, and then the next verse was about a young boy coming out.
Wow.
And then the chorus was sort of about those people just like going into their own little world to, just avoid their problems for the time being and just be with themselves and, sort of just like daydreaming a bit. You know what I mean?
That sounds like a Hunter Valentine song.
That was a long time ago.
I feel next rehearsal. When's your next rehearsal?
It will be actually taking like a week off, and then we'll go into the rehearsal studio to prepare for this Girl in a Coma Chrissy tour. In about a week, we'll be back.
Okay, so you have a week to arrange this and get it all set up, and it will be featured. Because I will say, we were just talking about you. I don't know if your ears were burning last week. Chrissy, a guest on last week's show.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's cool. I haven't met her band yet, but I'm really excited to be working with another artist who's so driven. We've always wanted to go out with Girl in a Coma, and we picked Chrissy to go out and tour with because we believe in the music and we think it's a really solid package.
Nice.
So yeah, working with other female musicians is not foreign to us. We're very familiar with it and happy to be back on an all-female tour because I think it's really important in the music industry to support that, you know?
Yeah. And not only a very female-friendly tour, but it's also a pretty queer-friendly tour.
Yeah, it is. You know, not everyone on the tour, I would say, is queer. I can't speak for everyone on the tour, but it is, you know, there will be a strong, I'm sure the community will be coming out to support this one for sure.
What does it mean for you, and how important to the music industry is it to have more out artists touring together?
I don't think it's completely necessary. I think mm-hmm. it's more actually important for queer artists to, you know, infiltrate the mainstream scene and just sort of get in there and make their mark in that way, you know. But I think it's also important to support younger queer artists who haven't toured as much, and you know, younger bands will hit us up and we're at a point where we can have them open up for us in certain cities and, you know, give them that opportunity to introduce themselves to a larger audience. So I'm really happy to be in a position where we can do that, and I don't think it's crucial to be playing with just queer artists, you know, or tour with just queer artists. But I think it's really cool that at the same time that we can come together and create a tour like this. You know what I mean?
Totally. And look, we have so many out singer-songwriters on the show, and we kind of dance. We've been dancing around this topic for, you know, 5+ years, and sometimes we don't get right at it. So we would love to get your take on it. You know, having queer artists infiltrate the straight scene and some of the straight artists who are out there. Are there still barriers that you're able to explicitly pick up on queer artists making it in the music industry these days?
Well, you know, to be really honest with you, you can't, obviously you can get pigeonholed, and I'm not really a fan of when people are like lesbian rock band, Hunter
right.
Valentine, because, you know, although sexuality plays a very strong role in rock and roll, it doesn't, like, I hear the word lesbian and it doesn't give me an idea of how the music is going to sound. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a genre.
Right.
So I really like to keep the focus on the music, but obviously, you know, even with people like David Bowie and Mick Jagger, who I've referenced in the past, their sexuality, which is actually seem pretty fluid in their careers, you know, they like to play with it a lot, played a very strong role in their image and how they came across.
Yeah.
And so it's always gonna affect the way that people perceive the band or their image, but I don't think it's what defines us, you know. So you have to be careful in terms of the career choices that you've made. You know, you look at a group like Tegan and Sara, and, you know, they're a very queer band, right?
Oh, yeah.
But they weren't going out and playing all the prides and stuff, and they still really supported their community and didn't back down from denying who they are. But they made a conscious effort to sort of be open to all audiences.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think when you cut your audiences off by, you know, pigeonholing yourself like that, it's really shortening your career length in a way, you know?
Right. But then it's interesting because you have the flip side of there are definitely audiences out there who are only looking to support queer artists. And I'm not sure what you do with that.
Like, you mean fans that are...
Oh, yeah. Them? Totally.
I think that's very narrow-minded. It's like... I mean, it's like... It's kind of a contradiction because here are some people who are asking for everyone to have an open mind and, you know, we're all equal and we, you know, need to set our minds free that way. But then they're only going to listen to queer music.
Right.
A little bit backwards.
It's a little bit backwards. Now, you, my friend, added a little bit of complexity to this whole mix because, you know, you don't go onto iTunes and type in lesbian music and that's what people are looking for. But at the same time, by being on The Real L Word, and we're going to talk about your Huffington Post piece, which I thought was brilliant, and I want to get back to that. Talk to us about that decision to be on The Real L Word and in many ways, in many audiences' minds, marry your craft with your identity.
Well, what intrigued me about The Real L Word when they're casting is the fact that they sort of pitched it that they were looking for people that were more career-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, that show was like, it didn't really show a lot of what people did, you know?
Right.
And even someone like Whitney, who's like the lead for, you know, all 3 years, seasons, she like worked in special effects. And I find that really interesting. You know, they didn't really show that. So the third season, they were trying to show that a lot more. And when I heard that, I said, okay, well, that means that it's going to be good for the band, you know, it's going to expose the music on an international level. The show airs in over, I believe, like more than 6 countries.
Yeah.
So, and I don't really know how a band could sort of get that kick start.
Right.
Without using television as a tool. Like, it's pretty, has an amazing reach. So I kind of put my reservations aside of, like, being pigeonholed for that and sort of took a chance, and it ended up that there's like, you know, the show has a very wide range actually of viewers, and you know, we have obviously a lot more female lesbian identified or queer identified fans, but there's also a lot of like straight women who watch it with their husbands, and we have them as fans too. And then, you know, a lot of guys watch the show too. Like, I have big dudes, straight dudes come up to me at the gym and they're like, hey, are you kidding me? I love your show, man. I'm like, wow. So, you know, there's more of a mixture of viewers for that show than one would think.
Well, you wrote, everyone should go to the Huffington Post and just type in your name, because you wrote this piece called How Being on the Real L Word Changed My Life. And let's be clear, this is a well-written piece, my friend.
Oh, thanks.
This is very well-written. And you wrote this, quote, when you expose yourself on reality television, you have to be ready for the positive and the negative. What I learned most was how to accept the negative. Let's be real, most artists are sensitive souls. They reveal their most inner experiences to the general public, and when their work is torn apart, it can leave a lasting burn. Reality TV has definitely groomed me to take a punch or two. Not only were we exposing our music to the masses for judgment, but our personal stories that created that music, which, again, very well written, but give us the two sides of it. Did it give you that exposure? Was it that opportunity? And then how did you cope with, I'm sure, some of the negative backlash that may have come your way?
Well, yeah, it definitely gave us the exposure that we were hoping for. I would have actually loved to have done another season. They're mm-hmm. changing their format up. I think that would sort of solidify a lot of, you know, a good number of fans.
Totally.
We still have a, you know, a huge increase in the amount of fans that we've gained from that show. And as far as the negative, how did I deal with it? Well, you know, I have my friend Lucas Silvera of The Clicks, lead singer.
Who's been on the show. We adore.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine. And, you know, he once told me that, like, if you start to focus on the negative reviews out there and you even, like, if you even go through and read them all, like, you're just going to drown in it. Because, like I said in that article, it's really, like, it's hard to put yourself out there artistically. I mean, people might not think that it is, but if you're a true artist, like, it is. It's like ripping off a Band-Aid and showing your wound, right?
Right, right.
So it's hard. So I really didn't read a lot of things that were online or a lot of reviews that were out there or the comments, because at first, when you're excited, there's a lot more attention, and you automatically go to do that, and it stings, man, you know?
Yeah.
So instead, there are a lot of new opportunities that were coming my way. You know, like I did a short film. I had somebody reach out to me, like an agent from saw the show and wanted to cast me in their film. I started to work with somebody who is a writer, like a novelist.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of different positive opportunities that came from that. And, you know, they were actually hitting me up through all my social media networks, which is where a lot of the negative interactions were coming from as well. So I just sort of blocked it out and focused on moving forward and the positive things, and put all my energy into that. And that's how I got through it, because there was a lot of backlash in the very beginning.
Yeah. And would you say as a whole, Hunter Valentine was supportive? Because that's kind of an interesting element as well. We were talking with, I think you're acquainted with Lauren Bedford Russell when she was on the show last year, of just, you know, that she's not necessarily accountable to a whole group, which is, you're in a kind of a different position.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, she's still my girlfriend.
We like her. We like her.
Yeah, she's doing her jewelry line is doing actually really great, like probably going into Neiman Marcus.
Oh, nice.
Doing some big things. Anyway.
How was it with you and the group? And there, did you have to constantly call them and say, okay, I think this might be on the air?
No, they knew, like, we watch it together quite often.
Nice.
You know, they were all on the show the whole time. A lot of their scenes just got edited out. A lot of our scenes together got edited out. They were very supportive when it was, like, harder for me to see some of the ways that the network decided to edit the show.
Yeah.
But when we were going through that time, it was like, you know, they would edit me in sort of a way that I didn't like. And our manager was like, you know, I think what they're doing is they have to sort of bring a character down to build them back up again. And so everyone can see them as a hero in the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think in a way they kind of did that. Like they kind of made me look like a real jerk in the beginning. And then in the end we had this great love story, which showed definitely a softer side.
Love it.
So I was okay with it. You have to just kind of like roll with it and say, you know, I committed to this entertainment show.
Right.
They've got to make it entertaining. You know, you can't expect it to all be roses.
Right. Well, one of the things that you can find there on Showtime.com, there's a little clip of you explaining to anyone who chooses to watch the difference between East Coast versus West Coast lesbians. Would you break it down for us for our show?
Well, I don't know what I said then.
Great. So what would you say now?
Yeah, like that's part of how you get over like some of the crap you say on the reality television show. You just forget what you say, you know? Like, oh, I said that?
I'm a fan of selective memory.
Yeah. So I guess the main difference I would say that I see is that, like, even though, you know, L.A. is in Hollywood, and, I mean, Hollywood is in L.A., and there's a lot of creative people, I just see, like, a lot of sort of grassroots, hands-on artists in Brooklyn and New York City, and they're a lot more straight and to the point,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot more gloss in Los Angeles. I like L.A., I really do, but I'm sort of like a very direct person.
Yeah.
Blunt, even, if you will. I feel like people beat around the bush, and I don't mean to.
Yeah, I gotcha, I gotcha.
But they beat around the bush and in L.A., and I really respect somebody who can just, like, tell you how it is straight to your face right away and give their opinion. And although I'm sure there are many people that are like that in Los Angeles, I just find that New York is a little more harsh, you know. They don't have time for bull.
Right. I hear you. All right, well, I have two items on my list, and one of them is this thing that I really enjoy about you, and the other is something that scares me. Which would you like first?
Let's start with the one that scares you, because then we can end on a nicer note.
We'll end on a nicer note. So I was surfing around on the Hunter Valentine website, and I'm thinking, I like band shirts. I think band shirts are fun to wear around, and I certainly own more than a few Hunter Valentine songs, so I can wear this with pride. I have a problem with the skull t-shirt. It scares me.
The skull t-shirt?
Scares me.
That's our number one seller.
Of course it is.
It's actually based on Day of the Dead.
I figured it doesn't scare me any less knowing the explanation, Kiyomi.
Well, we'll make sure to make a shirt that has, like, you know, pink roses and unicorns.
I can't see you doing that. I've heard your music. And then the thing that I love, which I discovered in an interview, by the way, there's a hilarious interview that you just did with a blogger on, and it's on the Huffington Post Gay Voices section, and it's hilarious. Who'd you do it with? Let me look. With Tristan Higgins, aka Butch Jackson. And it's a very entertaining interview, and so anyone can go check it out. But I discovered that, you have a passion for Woodford Reserve as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's my new favorite thing.
Oh, really? It's so good. You know, there's so many great Kentucky bourbons out there. And, like, when you go to Kentucky, there's this place called Liquor Barn.
Okay.
And it's, like, there's, like, two full aisles full of bourbon, like, all different smaller ones that you never heard of. It's amazing. And, you know, bourbon is, like, the same is champagne. Like, champagne can only be from Champagne, France, right?
Right.
Bourbon can only be from Kentucky, so I think it's kind of special that way, you know?
And if I were to combine the two items, I would say that I would need a lot of Woodford Reserve in order to wear the skull t-shirt.
Come on. We have it in white.
That just makes the contrast that much more stark. Quite frankly, I will be upfront with you. I ordered the other shirt, and I'm excited for it to arrive.
Oh, good. Thank you for your support.
I love supporting you guys. I love your music, and we're going to be playing some of your music in just a few seconds. So you guys are going out on tour. Where can folks go to learn all about the cool things that you are doing?
You can go to huntervalentine.com or our Facebook page and like us on Facebook. All the tour dates are on both of those sites. We have the Girl in a Coma tour with Christy coming up next. And then we'll be going out with Cyndi Lauper in the fall. So I think we pretty much have the entire country covered between those two tours. So check out dates, and hopefully we'll see you at a show soon.
I'm not seeing any Ohio dates on here. I'm feeling a little left out.
Oh, geez. You know, dates get added all the time.
That was the best answer you could have come up with. So exciting. So everybody, stroll on over to huntervalentine.com or look them up on Facebook. Hey, please say hello to Lauren Bedford Russell.
I will. She's in the other room right now, actually.
Tell her the jewelry that she was going to send us that I just made up has not yet arrived.
Oh, I will.
Okay. Kiyomi, what a treat having you back on the show. Have a blast on the road, and please keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. I'll speak to you soon. I stay out late because I don't want to feel lonely. This emptiness is starting to warm me in. I can't get out. I can't get out. I'll meet you later. Yeah, that I'm not done. No, she's trying hard. You're trying not to fight her a hand. I can't get out. I can't get out.
Well, we have pretty much no time left on this week's episode. There were a lot of LGBT news stories I wanted to throw out at you. There's a lot more updates on Russia. There's stuff going on in New Mexico, which I'll try to get to. But for some reason, I keep coming back to this story out of Tucson. Daniel Hernandez Jr., who is a school board member there in Tucson, Arizona, he was was he an intern? He was an aide. He jumped to help out Representative Gabrielle Giffords in 2011 after she was shot. He then continued on his public service ways and was elected to the school board there in Tucson. And there's a lot going on with the school board. I don't really get it. Stuff with the superintendent. I don't get it because I haven't really researched it. So, you know, that's my way of saying I don't get it. And so there's a recall campaign that some folks are waging to recall Daniel Hernandez Jr. from the school board. But of course, it somehow has become a smear campaign with anonymous flyers. And again, I don't know why I'm so fixated on this, but the flyers say, put a, and it's underlined, real man on the sunny side board. Daniel Hernandez is LGBT. We need someone who will support sports and care about our kids. We don't need someone who hates our values. Recall Daniel Hernandez today. And I know people do what they do and they'll put out anonymous flyers and that's just kind of what some people do. But for some reason, this one is just sticking in my craw. It's just being so unbelievable. And yet I guess it shouldn't be so unbelievable because we've been doing this show for 5 years and this is episode like 229 and I should be used to it. But there it is. There it is. The New York Times has endorsed mayoral candidate Christine Quinn, and Christine Quinn would become the first female mayor and the first out gay mayor, and I say out because there were rumors about others, out gay mayor there in New York City, so we will see what happens with that. Anxiously following that, I mentioned New Mexico. Two more New Mexico counties, Santa Fe and Bernalillo, have started issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples following Judge Alan Mallett's ruling that marriage license prohibitions are, quote, unconstitutional and unenforceable. Prior to that decision, another judge issued a preliminary ruling allowing Santa Fe County to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. Very exciting things happening there in New Mexico. Very exciting things in New Mexico. The Russia updates continue. There are more calls that the U.S. should boycott the Russian Olympics. More and more Russian athletes are coming out and saying, hey, this is wrong. This is not the spirit. What are we doing here? Should we issue more statements? There was also an interesting article just this past week on, hey, what's going on with tennis players? And you guys know I'm like a crazy huge tennis fan. And the U.S. Open started this week, and it's one of the four biggest tennis events of the year. And Russian women in particular, and there are some Russian men, but Russian women in particular are huge in tennis, and so it's very conspicuous, as many articles are noting, that they have not said a darn thing. Now, Maria Sharapova is out of the U.S. Open. She's out with an injury, so she's not playing. She hasn't said anything, but a lot of Russian women, some Russian men in the U.S. Open, and they're top of their game. That's one of the biggest sports around the world, tennis. Not so much in the U.S., but around the world, tennis is one of the biggest sports. So the curiosity factor is whether or not these Russian tennis players are going to come out and say, hey, we do not support the way our country is handling all of this just outright discrimination of gay people. We do want to give a shout out. This is very exciting. Dennis Dyson, who has been on the show before, he works for the Victory Fund. He actually has been on the show twice before, but the first time he was on the show years and years ago, I don't even remember. It was when we used to be live and there was a storm and we went live, but it didn't record. And it was very sad because it was actually one of the best chats that I've ever had ever on this show, Is So Gay, in the history of our show, which is really easy to say because you guys never heard the actual interview, but it was amazing. And I love talking to Dennis, and he was on not that long ago, but he got a huge promotion, and we want to give him a shout out. He was just named the senior vice president for programs at the Victory Fund and Institute, which means this is a guy who's really going to be on those front lines to get more out LGBT officials elected. I'm telling you, folks, if you have any interest in public office, I urge you to run at any and all levels of government. When he was first on, we were talking about a dog catcher race, and that was a really big deal wherever it was that it was. I don't really remember because, again, that was years ago. But having an out person running even for that position, it was a big deal. So I ran for select board. I sought the Victory Fund's endorsement because that was important to me. And I urge you guys to consider it, to do your research, to get in touch with Dennis or get in touch with anyone at the Victory Fund, because we really do need more out officials. The more out LGBT officials we have at all levels of government, I'm telling you, things change. It's just one of the ways. There's a million ways to use your voice. We're coming here to the end of the show, so it's that part where every single week I tell you to get out there and use your voice to make a difference, whatever it is that you do best, and you know what it is, and maybe for you it's running for public office, or maybe it's hosting a movie night, or starting a PFLAG chapter in your town, which, gosh, parents and friends of lesbians and gays really need support as well. So check out if there's a PFLAG chapter and start a PFLAG chapter. Whatever it is that you do to make a difference, please get out there and do it. And of course, hey, while you're doing it, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Like when you told me.